My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature person, Dustina and Kobe, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. And with that, Melissa will read the preamble.
Hi, my name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are all self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Thanks. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
And Liz will read the steps.
Hi, my name's Liz, and I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove all of our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs.
Allie will read the traditions.
Hi, my name is Alexandra, and I'm an alcoholic. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group should never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Judy.
Hi, my name is Judy, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Eleanor, for asking me to speak. I'm completely overwhelmed, and I've been really emotional all day, so I'm probably going to burst out into tears like I did at my watch, for those of you that were there. I'll start off with the basics. I had a year and a half this past week. My sponsor is Jackie. My home group is the Atlantic Group, and I'm currently working on steps 9 and living in 10, 11, and 12. So basically from the beginning, I was not a happy child. I never, ever liked myself. Starting from school, from about pre-K through second grade, my teachers would call my parents and tell them, you need to tell your daughter she can't lie, because I would make up different stories about who I was. One of my teachers even called my parents and said, what is your daughter's real name? Because she keeps coming in with a different one, and I don't know what to call her. So from third grade on, I really didn't have any fun anymore because I wasn't allowed to engage with my imagination. I started drinking when I was about 14, about eighth grade. There was four of us. We split two beers in the basement of my friend's mother's basement. And obviously that wasn't enough to get me drunk, so I just pretended, because that's what you do. I didn't know what drunk was, so I just acted like I was because it was cool. Eventually, though, I did drink enough, and I did start getting drunk. And I found a lot of freedom in that, because I found that, I just have to say welcome to all the newcomers, you know, and here's where I go. Because this program's given me a life. I never, ever liked myself. I mean, you know, today it's like I'm able to walk around with my head held high. My sponsor says, you know, it's becoming a person of dignity and grace. You know, and I walked around there for so many years just not liking who I was, being so ashamed of who I was. So if you're new, I really want to tell you that that will go away. I absolutely promise you that. If you're new, get a sponsor. A sponsor is someone who's going to go through the big book. That's our book. And they're going to take you through the steps. And your sponsor is also not exactly your friend. Your sponsor is going to tell you like it is. So you're going to get friends. You're going to do fellowship. You're going to do all that stuff. But you got to find a sponsor. I found my sponsor actually, just backtracking. Basically, I just drank a lot through high school and college. I went to one college, didn't like it, went to another college, decided to do a study abroad, decided to do another study abroad, came back, did a couple internships. I was just miserable. You know, I spent time in London, and I decided not to drink. I was going to be dry. So I spent every night writing in my journal, crying, why am I so miserable? What's wrong with me? You know, I thought I was such a gifted genius, but yet I thought I was cursed, like I had that artist's syndrome, you know, like I was just going to be haunted for the rest of my life. And so I came back, and I knew, like I had believed in a God, but with me, I really had a problem with God, because God, in my mind, abandoned me when I was 14, you know. It's just like I had some things that happened, and I was just like, and I just felt so rejected. I mean, I had already rejected myself, but then when someone actually did reject me, I really took that personally because I'm an alcoholic and I take things way too personally. So I decided the way that I was going to live my life was I was just going to put on this act. I was just going to wear a mask. I had my little alcoholic antennas, and I would judge you, and I would label you, and I would be whatever you wanted me to be. Because if you liked me, then for that moment, I would like myself, because otherwise I didn't. And I would do this thing I was thinking about recently where I would go to bars and clubs with my friends, or the people I drank with, and I would always leave the group, and I would walk around looking for something better, never finding it, except usually in like a bouncer, or a bartender, the owner, or an undercover cop. And yeah, I always found them. Or they found me. I don't know which one. But the funny thing was is that there would always be this point in the night where I was like not totally drunk yet, but pretty drunk. And I would sit there and I was like, you know, I wonder if anyone knows how good of an actor I am. I wonder if they really know how miserable I am and how much I hate myself and how I really just want to kill myself. And I would start to drink when I would think, well, maybe I should tell my friend. Maybe I should really talk to someone or talk to my family. But I was like, I didn't know how to do that. I was like, I thought I was supposed to be perfect. You know, that's just what I thought I should be. I thought that there was something wrong with me, that I wasn't like other people. And so then I met someone. Actually, this is the miracle. This is how God works in your life, is that I was walking around and I was completely miserable. And I had done 3 internships. And somehow all of them, my boss's names were Richard. And all of a sudden, one day, all 3 Richards called me and said, what is going on with you? Because we've tried to help you and you're running away. And I just remember that moment. I was like, okay, maybe someone notices that I need help. And then one of them told me that there was this program called Al-Anon. And he said, do you have alcoholics in your family? And I was like, not really, but you know what? Everyone is my problem. Like everyone. My family, my friends, all my boyfriends, because they all drank more than I did. Like, I need Al-Anon. So I went to Al-Anon, but the funny thing was is I spent 2 years in untreated Al-Anon and, you know, blaming everyone. And I kept ending up going to AA meetings, and I would get so angry. I was like, I'm not supposed to be in an AA meeting. This said Al-Anon, you know, and I would leave, but it was really God trying to get me there. And then one day I went to a meeting, and I actually saw my sponsor there. And there was just something about her, and I was like, wow, she's got it together. I think I'm going to ask her to be my sponsor. And I called her and I asked her to be my sponsor. And she said, well, I just want to tell you that, you know, I'm also an alcoholic. And I heard this little voice in my head go, you should tell her you think you have a problem with drinking. But I said, oh, okay, thank you. And the thing was is that, you know, AA teaches you to be a power of example to others. We practice these principles in all of our affairs. Wherever we go, we never know who we're going to meet. And really, it's like I needed to see Jackie that day. You know, it's like I just realized this the last week that that probably saved my life. I needed to see someone who had it together because I thought alcoholics were just like totally crazy, you know, the Bowery guys. And I didn't know like that there could be this beautiful woman who has like confidence. And I remember going up and talking to her and I just burst out into tears because it's like she saw me. You know, it's like as alcoholics, we see your pain. You can't fool around with us because we know we've been there. You know, and you know, and my last night out, you know, I got drunk. I ended up all the way uptown in the morning crying to no one. I could have been killed. I could have been raped. A lot of really bad things could have happened. And so I knew that there was this woman in AA, and I decided to give it a shot because I was desperate. There was nothing else left for me. And I came in, and it's like, you know, don't wait to get sober. You're not going to get sober just sitting in meetings. You really need to do the work. You know, I always think I didn't get drunk going into a bar watching people drink, so I'm not going to get sober sitting in a meeting not doing anything. You know, it's like you really need to just dive in and take the steps. It's going to be really uncomfortable. And I can tell you that I am still uncomfortable, but I feel so much better. You know, in this program, I have friends, and I call them frequently, and I call them and I cry. I don't keep secrets anymore. I can't. It gives me this awful feeling. When I have something, I need to take a sip of water. When I hear that voice say, don't tell your sponsor this, I call her and I tell her. Because that, my mind is the problem. My mind never stops. Like, I actually have to pray now for God to just stop thinking. Like, I need to keep myself in action. And amazing things have happened. I came in here unemployed. I have a job today. And I show up, and sometimes I get really impatient. And I wanted to share one story where I was impatient with something, and I was crying to God in the morning, and I was like, God, why isn't it working out? You know, why don't I have this job? Why am I still single? Why is this? And I went to work, and I was there for about 20 minutes, and the girl that I was working with just turns to me and says, I can't stop drinking. And then she just looked at me, like, and she says, I don't know why I just told you that. I've never told anybody that. And I was just like, okay, I get it. And so I said, well, what are you doing after work? And she said, well, I have some time. And so we actually went to the diner, and we had coffee, and we read the doctor's opinion. And she's still out there, but she has my phone number. And so it's like I walked back to the subway, and I was like, all right, God, I get it. You know, it's like, it's not on my time. I spent 25 years out there being a taker. I was always, what am I going to get? What are you going to give me? And today, I can be a giver. And that's what I do. That gets me out of myself. And I just wanted to share with you, if you're new or if you have time, you know, Peggy, when I first got sober, told me gratitude is an attitude. And I had no idea what she was talking about. But nowadays, what I do is I wake up in the morning and I always write a gratitude list. Because I want to wake up and I want to think about what's missing, what I don't have, what somebody better has, all this stuff. But if I walk around every day and I just say, thank you, I have a job, I live in an apartment, I can eat something, I have someone that I can call, it's like, it's amazing how your world changes. Because really, it's a disease of perception. And if I walk around thinking about lack and thinking what I don't have, I'm not going to be a very happy person, and I'm going to have nothing to offer. And so today, what this program will teach you is that you have a lot to offer people. Everyone does, because you're here and you're sober. And I just want to thank you all for saving my life, because you all have. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Hector.
Hi, my name is Hector. I'm an alcoholic. Well, this is really huge. Thank you, Helen, for asking me to speak, and Chris also. My sober day is November 11, 2004. My sponsor is Vince. This is my home group. I just finished the fifth step. I'm now 6 and 7. I remember when I was like 5 years old, when I was in the fifth grade, I remember that my mom would send me to the store, but we live like 2 doors next to a bar. And every time I passed through the bar at night, mostly Fridays, like it was like Happy Friday or whatever that is, and I would look into the bar and would see the people looking happy, raising their glasses, drinking. That was the perception I had back then, and I liked that. I liked that. Since that very early age, I knew something was missing, but I couldn't pinpoint exactly what it was. From the get-go, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. I mean, I was into sport because, you know, like you heard about kids taking a nap in kindergarten, I ever took a nap, even in my teens. So, you know, I was restless most of the time. I felt something was missing, but I didn't know what it was. I took my first drink when I was like 20, and I liked the feeling because everything, all the problems, all the insecurities went away. I can speak to the girls. I don't have to be responsible for my actions, and I like that. And the first time I blacked out, we went to, we supposed like every time I drink, I have like a plan, okay, I'm just gonna get one. I'm gonna go somewhere, and then I'm gonna come back home, but that didn't happen. I blacked out in the movies. When I came to my senses, I was spread over, you know, all over the place in the bathroom. I didn't know what happened. Blacked out like 2-3 hours. So next time I try to drink, I make a plan. Okay, I'm going to get just beers. And it happens that from beer, I would go to one drink, 2 drinks. I mean, I never have control over it. I have a plan, like I outline, but every time I went there, it never worked. It got bad to the point that I'm married early, but that didn't stop me from drinking. I mean, I didn't matter. It didn't matter if I was married or not, I would drink because I didn't know how to deal with life on life's terms. And the only thing that really gave me comfort was drinking with the beer. Fast forward to, I moved off to New York at 21, and I stayed dry for 3 years, but I was full of fear. I can, you know, somebody told me before the meeting, just tell the truth. I was 21. I was full of fear because I wasn't drinking. And again, I said, well, if I take a drink or whatever it is, I'll be okay. And that's what I did. I blacked out again. I used to black out. I liked this area of First Avenue, like Friday's night, blacked out, wake up 3 or 4 hours later, be on the sidewalk, and a whole bunch of people be looking down on me like, what happened? And then I said, well, no matter what plan I did, I would go on and do it again and again and again. So one time I was in this hotel with friends and I got drunk. And all I remember, I was taking a few drinks and then I wake up 3 days later in a hotel floor. And my friend, they're looking at me like weird. Like I said, what happened? I said, Hector, you're trying to jump off from the hotel. And I said, okay, so I got to stop drinking. The following day, I went out and drink. I kept drinking and drinking. So I've been to rehabs, but rehabs just keep me dry. I mean, like I was planning my run on the rehab. I was saying, okay, if I go out, I'm just going to drink beer. If I go out, if I just can't drink Fridays, so that will be fine. So, and then the same pattern happens again. Drinking, back to rehab, drinking, becoming homeless. Blacking out on Friday's night on First Avenue in a hot summer day like today, walking in the middle of the street like a zombie and wake up like 3 or 4 hours later. And, you know, that happens too in Puerto Rico, but in the highways. And for me, I feel like it's a miracle that I'm alive because I'm not supposed to be here. You know, some people take away that the lifestyle of drinking and blacking out, they don't last one night. And I'm really grateful to God for that. Fast forward to... I end up in jail for dry stuff that I was dealing with. I end up in jail, and I was planning marijuana. And I said, as long as I don't touch this, but I touch alcohol, I'll be fine. I still try to keep it under control. So I came home and stayed 3 years dry, but I was so full of fear that every time I come home from work on the train, like, I couldn't close my eyes because I felt like somebody was ready to jump me at the train station. And every time I went home, like, I feel like somebody was waiting for me in the hallway. It was a fear. I mean, I was full of fear. And it happens that I did a long-term rehab. And before the rehab, okay, I was in this relationship. The relationship wasn't working. And I was praying to God, but I was drinking every day because I was raised up in church, but I decided to walk out of there. I'm doing it on my own. So it happens that every now and then I would hear this voice that said, no matter how long you go or how far you go, it will come back. So it happens that I have an argument with my fiancé. My fiancé story. I gave my fiancé a ring. I got engaged in a blackout. And, you know, so when I wake up next day, she said, honey, here... I guess we engage. So the relationship didn't work, like I said before. So I was praying to God because I couldn't bear the pain. I couldn't, like, every Monday morning I would have to take out the garbage and it was full of bottles. And that clinging noise of the bottles and people looking at me in the hallway like, he's an alcoholic. But I was in denial. So anyway, I checked myself in. I was praying to God, and then I was going to this maintenance program, and the plan was, okay, honey, we kissed and made up. Everything was fine. On the way out, she kissed me, gave me a hug. I see you when you come back. As soon as I stepped into that program maintenance, like a light went on. I said, Hector, I don't have 2 years no more. So I went in, checked myself in rehab, long-term, 18 months, and that's what I started CAA, the meetings. And something that really stood with me is that if I work the program like halfway, it's not going to work. Has measured available nothing. So from there, I started going to meetings, and I got some sober time, but I was dry. I was working on steps. So I went into, somebody asked for, I was going to 12-3 workshop. Somebody was asking for people for intergroup, so I went to intergroup, and I met my first sponsor, Wilbur. And then he took me to the first meeting, VA hospital. And then he said, on the way there, if you're going to share something, just keep it on alcohol. Don't say nothing else. I said, okay. So my perception was like, here we go to hospital. My perception of detox is people in gowns and in wheelchairs and crawling all over the place. But when I walked into the VA hospital meeting Sunday, I said, wait a minute. Everybody looked like together, nice, clean, well-spoken, well-behaved. So I stayed there. So I don't remember the speaker, but the speaker on that Thursday, the following week, was Helen. And I came here close-minded. I said, if I don't hear anything spiritual from this lady, I'm leaving. And, you know, I'm leaving. So, you know, what she said kept me there because I'm here. I'm still here. And I'm really grateful, you know, to her for that. And then my sponsor took me to some steps, and then I have another sponsor, Vince, and then he was very forward with me. He didn't cut me no slack. From the get-go, he said, are you willing to go any length to stay stopped? I said, yeah. And it's been wonderful. I mean, I've been taking the suggestion, and it's great, and this program really worked. The best suggestion I can tell, this is what I do to stay sober. I make as many meetings as I can. I try to help another alcoholic somewhere, somehow, in a day. If I don't make a meeting, I call 3 people. And I pray like 3 or 4 times a day. I do my meditations. I still got to work on. I'm still struggling with that because I can't sit still, but I still need to work on that. You know, if you're not welcome, you're in the right place. This program really, really works. If you don't believe that, just look around. And thank you for the opportunity. It's really been an honor to speak here. Thank you for letting me share.
Our main speaker tonight is Marie.
Thank you. I'm Marie. I'm an alcoholic. Very, very privileged and grateful to be here. My home group is the Cedarhurst Hewlett Group. We're in Long Island. Come and visit us. We'll welcome you just as you did me. We meet on Wednesday, which is tomorrow, and Friday is our open meeting. I'm very, very grateful to be here and want to thank Helen. Actually, tomorrow, 7-Eleven, is my 24th anniversary. The only thing I did was show up. Anybody knew, really, this is very simple. Not easy, but really simple. I never thought I could go a day without a drink, and 24 years later, some days I still think that. But because of a loving God, a home group, a sponsor, and fellowship like this, that's not necessary. I didn't need to drink. But I have to tell you, and I will say it, when they said balcony, I wanted to run out of here. I'm ego-driven, and usually I love all this attention, but when I got here, again, I wanted to run out. I've been very privileged to share it, you know, some group anniversaries and things like that, but this I know is a very special gift. And again, look what God can do. My anniversary is tomorrow. Helen asked me to do this, I think, 6 or 7 months ago. And believe me, anything I thought about saying, you will not hear at all. If you knew, really what we try and do, and my sponsor always tells me, just tell your story, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, just as it's revealed in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And believe me, I drank a lot to get here. I'm born and raised in this city. I'm a native New Yorker. My dad still lives on 7th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue. And my godmother just showed up. She lives down the road on 63rd and 2nd. So native New Yorker is what I am. And in case you didn't notice it, you could probably tell from my accent. When people hear me, they go, oh, here she comes. Usually it's my voice before, you know, they see me. But you know what? I'm proud of that. And for anybody new, I always say, be yourself. You know why? Everybody else is taken. So just really be not a secondhand rate somebody else. Be who you are, you know. And that means you don't have to be drunk and disorderly. And believe me, the precinct on 5th Street, the 9th, I've showed up there on more occasions than I'd like to think of. The person that you see here is nothing like what arrived on the doorstep of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did come to lots of meetings, and I was always welcomed. I don't know about anybody, but I think Hector mentioned spiritual. What part of the ocean is wet? All of it. What part of Alcoholics Anonymous is spiritual? All of it. I didn't feel that way when I got here. In fact, there are days that I still don't feel like that. But you know what? I am spiritual because God picks each and every one of you, hand picks you. So don't spit in his face and don't give this up. You know, just if you have to come here shaken, believe me, I am shaking in my boots right now, but you know what? That's a good thing because the ego must surrender to the divine. I practice more yoga today. I'm more in touch with my physical, mental, and spiritual being. We're all spiritual, living a human existence. And alcoholics, unlike anybody else, we look for that everywhere. But where it is, right in front of us. It's right here. It's amazing to me. Every day that I stay sober, I say, well, I didn't do anything other than what I did when I first arrived here. I got sober in Brooklyn, and we're very militant there, too. In fact, when you mentioned, I was in Akron in September, and of course I had a big argument with somebody there because we feel it started in Brooklyn on Atlantic Avenue, where Ebbie Broad billed the message. So when they talk about Akron, we have a standing joke in Brooklyn. Not true. But my point is that if you're asked to be disciplined, which we are here, don't fight that because we are not disciplined people, alcoholics. So in Brooklyn, we were meant to sit down, shut up. We don't want what you have. You want what we have. And from that day to this, that's what I try and impress on a newcomer. I don't care what you do. If you read the book, if you call me at 7 in the morning, that to me, I don't need that. That's my ego. You must come to meetings. This is 2007. You can go online, you can fax, you can email, you can, I don't know what this new phone is, this iPhone. People are lining up for that. No. Sit in the seat next to somebody maybe that's suffering, breathing the fumes. Because that's where you're going to get your information. You don't have to go there. Alcoholics Anonymous will spoil your drinking. Believe me. Every time I went back out after I came to a few meetings, I'd say, oh, God. Those people said whatever. And you know what? It works. We've been doing it this way for 72, 73 years. It's no different than it was from day one. And when I was in Akron, I was so privileged, I was so moved, I couldn't believe that two professionals don't forget, you know? So if you're a doctor or you're a neurosurgeon or something you think maybe you can't get this, believe me, leave your intellect out there because it is spiritual. But those two men with another power. To me, I can't separate Alcoholics Anonymous from the human and the divine. There isn't any separation because if you're not coming to meetings, if you're isolated, if you're at home reading the book or online, you're not going to get the gift one human being gives to the other. You're just not going to get it. It's the same as it was. You know, we have home groups. They're called home groups. And my home group in Brooklyn, the Prospect Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, celebrated their 58th anniversary. And I'm forever grateful that that group was in place. Doors were open. Coffee was on. Literature was at the door. Because I don't know where I would have gone. No rehab, no detox, no therapeutic community. Came in shaking, just as I am now, stuttering. And somebody said, sit down. It's going to be okay. That's the human part, you know. You can't do this without a sponsor. My sponsor, Anne-Marie, was sponsored by a woman named Teddy who was alive and got sober when Bill Wilson was still living, 1968. So I don't want to be the one to say, you know what, I don't need a sponsor. I don't need to sponsor anybody because I don't want to break the chain. There is a direct lineage for you newcomers that just shared today. You're being groomed to give back what was so freely given. And believe me, I don't deserve to be here. Nothing I did. If I got what I deserved, I'd never be here. I don't say that with arrogance. I don't say that with... But I'm an only child, mother dead at age... I was 7. I was, you know, brought up by my dad, no siblings. I was ready for the drink. And then at age 15, my grandmother passed away. And that was devastating to me. My godmother is here. I wanted her to come, really, to hear how grateful I am, you know, that I could have landed anywhere, you know. But I remember that was July 4th, and my neighbor came to me and said, oh, they took your grandma to Cabrini Hospital on 20th Street. Do you know that was the first AA meeting I ever went to? I called up New York Intergroup on a Monday morning, and I said, I'm drunk. I don't know what to do. And the man on the other end said, you go to this meeting. It's on 20th Street at Cabrini Hospital. I never put that together. What I'm trying to say to the newcomer, you are being led by a divine thread, unbeknownst to you. You know, sometimes I say this and I say, who's talking? You know? I would go to La Bamba on 12th Street and 2nd Avenue, roll up to the bar, and all hell would break loose. And they go, lady, we told you you can't show up here. This was 1983. There were people in there with blue mohawks and safety pins through there. I mean, I looked fairly decent, I thought. They would throw me out because I couldn't articulate what was so important to me. Listen to me. Listen to me. And that's what we do when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous. We listen to one another. But believe me, I love to talk. You might have noticed. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a love affair with AA since I got here. And as I say, for me, anywhere I can go, anywhere I'm invited, again, thank you, Helen, is all because look what God can do, as I say. So all you need to do really as a newcomer is sit in the seat. We know who you are. I would come to the Greenwood group of Alcoholics Anonymous. There were all longshoremen there. It's on 20th Street across from the Greenwood Cemetery. And again, I'd roll up and they'd go, are you new? I'd go, how do they know? I figured I'd put my earrings on. I'd get myself together. We know when you're new, believe me. And we're grateful because that would, you know, was what kept me going. I felt nurtured, important. There were two women, as I said, very early in my sobriety, who just led me. Teddy would say, I'll pick you up at 7. Maybe she'd stop the car. I'd have to tuck and roll and get in because if you were a few minutes late, she wouldn't wait for you. That's the discipline, you know. In for the preamble, out for the prayer. That's what she used to say. Not a half a meeting. And, she would just be so, and she was always put together, she always looked great, and I couldn't imagine when she shared her story that she would get up on the bar, you know, swing her pearls around, light the cigarette, start dancing, and I'd say, wow, you know, I needed to identify with somebody, and I was able to identify with Teddy. I mean, I just felt her compassion, but she wasn't full of crap. She didn't want to hear a sermon. She wanted to see one. If you weren't at a meeting, she wouldn't hear it. Where were you? And I'd start to stutter. But if we didn't see Teddy in August, it was because she was in New England, where she was born and raised. And again, the thread. I was privileged to be at one of the Massachusetts state conventions. And of course, I mention her name every time I... You know, and somebody came up and said, oh, yeah, I remember Teddy. You're a pistol just like her. And for that, I'm grateful. Because, you know, women, particularly my mother. My mother was 27, you know, and ravaged by alcohol. Ravaged. Duodenal ulcer, cirrhosis of the liver, acute alcoholism. This is all on a death certificate that was never something I could accept. But I'm a living legacy to her. And for women back then, you know, who would come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I needed to see people like Teddy, who would tell you the way it was, didn't take any nonsense, but there she was, hair always fixed, nails always done. You know, Helen said, please dress. Teddy wouldn't go out of the house without, you know, even at the end when she was dying of cancer and she'd come to a meeting, she'd have her turban on, she'd have her earrings on, and we'd go, oh, there's Teddy, you know, a vision, because that's an example. We want to see what's going on. You could read about it till the cows come home. You could be what Alcoholics Anonymous is to the public. That's very important to me, too. When I'm at my home group and people start, I mean, I'm in a church. I can't get over this. It's the second time I've shared actually in the church itself. But when I hear newcomers cursing and throwing their cigarette butts around and I roll over and, wait, what are you, the AA police? Well, would you send somebody to AA if that's the first vision you saw? No. You know, I'm not saying you have to come in a floating robe and, you know, a halo or whatever. As I said, be yourself, but be respectful. I mean, it doesn't cost anything. And I love the ones that are fresh out of, you know, 90 days. Well, they told me. I said, who told you? Point, where are they? Show them to. Who told you? No. No. That's the alcoholic. You know why? Because I did the same thing. When they gave me the privilege of making the coffee at the Prospect Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, this is where the pot goes, Marie. Well, the next week, you know what I did. I put it on the other side of the room. I thought it was artistic license. They said, no. This is where the... And I couldn't get it, you know. I said, why? Well, because when the newcomer comes in and they're shaking and then they're drawing the coffee and burning themselves, have a little continuity. That's what it's about. And AA has given me that. Believe me, I am self-will run riot. There isn't anything until we're in pain, you know. To me, that's what it is. Touch the stove. First time you get burnt, alcoholic will touch it again. I touched it a third time, fourth time, still burnt. Well, maybe the fifth or the sixth time, you know how we are, then I'd stop touching the stove. A two-year-old baby, if you have kids, you'll see them, oh, boo-boo, oh, boo-boo. They don't touch that stove anymore. We drink. Different. It's going to be different this time. Boo-boo. I can't tell you how many times on Second Avenue I'd be coming out of that bar, knots on my head, no shoes, and I'd look and I'd say, yeah. Until, you know, July 10th of 1983, I couldn't look in the mirror anymore. I couldn't believe what I saw. You know, I was living in Brooklyn at that time, and, you know, for anybody new, I always say my own personal observation, if you take nothing, take a meeting list, because I had this meeting list squirreled away for 2 years. I looked up a meeting, and I was able to get there, you know. But my point is that we have to really be, it says in here, beaten into a state of reasonableness. We're not going. I don't know about you, but I had to be beaten, bewildered, bedazzled, bludgeoned, and I'd still touch the stove. Today, I have no question in my mind I'm alcoholic. First, physically. I cannot safely drink alcohol. There's no way. And don't you think in 72 years, don't you think somebody, we're pretty smart people, somebody would have figured it out? I don't care what people say to you. They can tell you, hurry up, take your fourth step, hurry up, be a GSR, hurry up, hurry up. If they tell you you can occasionally drink, run away from them. Run away, because we don't. That's most important. That's practical. You can't be spiritual until you're practical. You must be where you are. You must be in the now. That's key. I never wanted to be in the moment. I was... Now I'm looking to the future because I'm past a few you know. But at the beginning, I was so upset. Oh, what I did, who I hurt, what happened. You can make all that up. I mean, you can make your amends. You can take care of things. You're never going to change it, but you can make it so you're comfortable with it. But the point is, you must start somewhere. Don't take the first drink. It's key. Who would have thought? Don't take the first drink. You know, I was a vodka drinker. I'd go up and I'd say, I don't know what they're drinking now, what this Grey Goose is, but I would drink like Stolichnaya. And so I'd order that. Of course, the vodka drinkers can identify with that. And then the next morning I'd call in my job and I'd say, I have the Russian flu. I can't live with those hangovers anymore. I just can't, you know. I mean, I had the flu legitimately a couple of years back. Oh, my God, I never want to feel like that again. What alcoholics put ourselves through is unbelievable. You know, the pain and the suffering. To what end? Here it is. It's right here. Present. That's why it's a gift. Anything that I've ever, you know, shared or that I've been able to give is because somebody has given it to me. Believe me. And that's what we're being groomed for, you know. Just to be of maximum service, again, in the big book. How can we serve our fellows? God first, fellows next, I'm last. And I believe that today. Because anytime I am ego-driven, I'm in a lot of trouble. And that's a lot of days. You know, this is 2007. Don't be naive. You can't go out on a 12-step call today like we did years back. No. Take somebody with you, or better still, say, you know what, meet me at this meeting. I'm going to be there. Again, visible, available. You know, because I don't know what's out there today for me to even have to experiment with anymore. You know, I'm a product of Woodstock. I've been back and forth 100 different times. My husband goes to me, stop going there. No, it was an idea. Peace, love, music, that's what we were looking for. Then it became sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You all know what I'm talking about, you know. And it wasn't good. It really wasn't. But the thing that I found today, when I sit still and I try and listen to that little voice, that's what meditation is. Hector was saying he's working on that. I'm working on that too. I can sit now for about 38 minutes. That is unbelievable. Still, you know, upright. Listening, because, you know, prayer is a petition, and that's how we all got here. Somebody prayed for us. Somebody prayed for me. I pray for everybody. But meditation is when the universe talks to you. And I don't know about you, but sometimes that makes me a little nervous, you know? I go, is that schizophrenic? What is that, you know? Be still, my sponsor says. Be still and know I am God. That's all you have to do. Just be still. And, you know, for everything that I've learned, it's from some other source, not my, you know, certainly nothing that I made up. The only thing I might, you know, say, a friend of mine says, oh, Marie, you always say that funny little thing about if you like everybody in AA, you're not making enough meetings. I might have made that up. I don't know. I don't remember ever hearing that from anybody. Because there are a lot of people I don't like, but you know what? I give them a wide berth, and I know they give me the same courtesy. But as alcoholics, we will drop everything and run when one of us is in jeopardy. I do it. But again, not from some crack house on 3rd Street. I don't do that anymore, you know. But give a meeting list. Give some literature. Give a phone number. Give of yourself. That's what the newcomer wants to see, care and understanding. I don't want to be beaten with this book. I wasn't treated like that. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. Hurry up what? I just got here. I just got here. But you know what? Sooner or later, you have to do the work. You can't just coast through life. Everything that you put into life, you will get back. You know, how do you become I heard the piano over there, and they used to have a standard joke. Well, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice. So if you think you want to play the piano, you have to sit in front of the piano. If you think you want to get sober, you must come to meetings, you must get a sponsor, you must get a home group, and you must be prepared when somebody asks you to stand and deliver, that's what you need to do. Believe me, I said to Helen outside, I made the ultimate sacrifice. Do you know that the All-Star game is on tonight? I'm a huge, huge baseball fan. And I heard you have a team. When I was getting sober in Brooklyn, we had a Serenity League. And for 3 years that I think it was my first 3 years in sobriety, I played on that league. And we used to play down in Red Hook, and it was fabulous. Because fellowship, as they say, is key. We have a big picnic coming up in Nassau. We get together because the newcomer wants to see us having fun. If the newcomer gets here and we're all pissing and moaning and complaining, who wants to be here? The joy of living, that's what it's about. And that's an action. You can't just wish to, you know, I wish I was 20 years younger and had my old body back, but that ain't happening either. But you can't wish to be sober. It's going to take all your focus, all your concentration, and every ounce of effort. It does not come natural to us. There are days I wake up and I say, oh boy, I better get to a meeting. Better do some service. Better do something. Liz B., who maybe a lot of you might know, her anniversary is tomorrow too, 7/11. She's a few years ahead of me. God love her. But she would say, do something. I go, okay, Liz, you know. Again, things that you see, my sponsor calls them signs in your own recovery. Look for them. They're there. This is not random. This wasn't just something that just happened. Again, if you're new, you're not just going to happen to get sober. You got to do a lot of work. The payoff is brilliant. Believe me. Anything that I can ever do for Alcoholics Anonymous and the God of my understanding is a privilege, not a chore, not an effort, a privilege. And I know you're all going to feel that way too, because that's what we do. We love one another. The book is wonderful. We read it. We study it. The fellowship is going to show up at the funerals. They're going to show up at your kids' weddings. They're going to show up when you're sick in the hospital. They're going to show up. And if they don't, shame on them. I'm just saying, shame on them. Because I'm not saying you have to drop everything and again, run down to that crack. Oh, no, my sisters. No. What I'm saying to you is when you're asked, say yes. Please and thank you. That's all it's about. Please help me and thank you all for listening. Thanks.